Jim Elliott and four other missionaries, Nate Saint, Ed McCauley, Peter Fleming, and Roger Udarian, were seeking to reach out to a fierce Ecuadorian tribe known as the Alcas when those same Indians turned on them. The shocking news of the deadly attack spread around the world. But Jim's widow, Elizabeth, surprised many when she and her young daughter, Valerie, lived there with the same tribe for 2 years. On Gateway to Joy, Elizabeth Elliott shares with you the lessons learned through that and many other events in her remarkable journey. Thanks for joining us for Gateway to Joy. Here's Elizabeth Elliott.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliott talking today in the studio with my daughter Valerie. And Val, I wanted us particularly to talk about the subject of Santa Claus. What do you think about Santa Claus?
We have never told our children that there was a Santa Claus, simply because it's not true. But we do allow them to say that it's a pretend story. And our main thing has been to teach them that the gifts come from mom and dad or from friends and relatives, and that the pretend story is that the Santa Claus comes down the chimney and puts gifts in the stockings. They know that the gifts in the stockings are from mommy and daddy, and we do it Christmas Eve. Because my mother brought me up the same way, she didn't tell me that Santa Claus was real. We've really followed in that path because we didn't want our children to be disappointed when they found out he wasn't real. We really do try to emphasize that we are celebrating Jesus' birth. We read the Christmas story all through Advent as we prepare for the celebration of his birth.
I feel very strongly about this, Val. As you know, I feel so strongly about a lot of things. And there are three reasons why I think that it's a very bad thing to perpetuate the Santa Claus story with your children as though it were a true story and not a fairy story. Children need to know the difference between true stories and fairy stories, and I am certainly not against fairy stories. I'm strongly for them. C.S. Lewis's Narnia books and George MacDonald's Princess and Curdie books. But my mother told us the story of how when it wasn't until she was about 7 years old that one of her little friends told her that there wasn't any Santa Claus. And she just cried and cried and cried. She felt as though she had lost her best friend. Mm-hmm. And I've heard of stories of people who have put God in the same category with Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. The same parents who told them about the existence of God and that Jesus loves me and all that were parents who also told them the Santa Claus story. So when the Santa Claus story disintegrated, mm-hmm. the God story also disintegrated. Mm-hmm. So first of all, the children get horribly disappointed. Secondly, it involves just plain outright lying. You've got to keep on lying. And once you tell one lie, then you have to build up a whole fabric of lies. Mm-hmm. The kids are going to find out pretty soon that it's quite impossible for Santa Claus to come down the chimney. Well, if Santa Claus doesn't come down the chimney, who is it that fills the stockings? And then when the kids go out to the mall and they see three Santa Clauses mm-hmm. and one on every street corner, mm-hmm. surely the fabric of lies becomes extremely complicated. Yeah. We don't want to tell them lies. We don't want the children to be disappointed and feel that they've lost a great friend. And we do want to teach the value of fairy stories as opposed to true stories. We want to show them the distinction. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that you've clarified that as far as your own convictions as a family go. Now, can you tell us what sort of Christmas plans your family makes?
We usually start in October talking about gift giving, and I was thrilled to hear my daughter say, my one who loves to buy things and loves to spend her money, that I was thrilled to hear her say that she this year was going to make gifts for her family. And I really want to encourage that this year. First of all, there's not much good on the market that they can buy for one another. And secondly, it certainly shows more thoughtfulness and unselfishness when they have to work at something to give it to somebody else. One tradition that we started in our family that was not in my mother's family was that because so many people gave our children gifts, being a pastor's family, there were some Christmases where we had just an overabundance of gifts, and I felt it was just too much for the children, especially children under five, to be able to appreciate or accept all on Christmas morning, to open up all these different gifts. So we decided that each child was allowed to choose one of the gifts from under the tree to open on Christmas Eve. And this would be after our Christmas Eve service at the church and after our family reading of the Christmas story. So they were allowed to open one gift, and that way they could appreciate that one gift and the next morning not have quite so many to open all at once. Another tradition that we have is to have a good breakfast, and baked apples has been my last 3 years' tradition for Christmas breakfast, and some kind of a bread, baked apples with bread that I baked. Have that when everybody gets up and after they have opened their stockings.
Where do they open their stockings?
My husband and I have usually come downstairs when the children were up. I think a couple of times they probably opened them on our bed, but we always told them that we had to wait for both mom and dad to be awake before they could open their stockings. They couldn't open them on their own. They had to have us with them. And we
remember, you remember that New Yorker cartoon of the little kids?
They had opened everything.
Two little kids in their pajamas sneaking in, waking up the parents, and it's obviously pitch dark outside, and they said, we opened
everything.
Everything.
So we've only allowed them to open them, even the little stocking presents, one at a time, so everybody could appreciate and see what each one was getting. But then after breakfast, everybody has to be dressed, and the breakfast dishes have to be cleaned up, and the beds have to be made before we can all go together to sit down in the living room. And then we choose one of the children of the family to be, quote, the Santa Claus, the person who hands out the presents. And then everybody takes a turn opening a present, and everybody has to watch each one. And my children have enjoyed that, even though they say, do we have to wait for everybody else to open their presents? I can actually see that they enjoy the taking the turns and watching each one open a present. So it usually takes almost till 10:30 or 11 o'clock in the morning before all the presents are unopened. And we don't even have as many presents as some families I see have under their trees.
Do you have a special menu for Christmas dinner? Do you invite guests?
Yes, we almost always have guests. If we don't have our own family with us, we try to invite the single people or the young couples in our church that don't have family to have Christmas with. And we usually eat about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and we have turkey and sweet potatoes and the typical Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner that most Americans would have.
Now, you didn't tell us about when you put your tree up, and is there a special ceremony of trimming it?
Yes, we've usually put our tree up anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks before Christmas, and we have all gone out as a family to get one, and we've had to go to Christmas tree lots because we've never lived close enough to an empty country area for us to go and find our own Christmas tree to cut down. But we've chosen the Christmas tree and brought it home together, and as soon as Dad can get it up in the stand, then we have a special Christmas tree trimming party where we may sing some Christmas carols, and then we may have hot chocolate or roasted marshmallows or something like that along.
Do you have a fireplace?
Yes, we have a fireplace, and we use it a lot even in Southern California.
As I recall, a lot of your Christmas ornaments were handmade by the children.
Yes, even the first year that I was married before I had children, I had made a lot of the ornaments. I still have those, and the children still like to make more ornaments, so we work on it every year, a few ornaments at a time.
Do you have a creche?
Yes, a homemade one. My mother gave us some figurines that are plastic, so they're really pretty. They look like they're wooden carved figurines, but they're not breakable. So I allow the children to put it up on the coffee table or to bring it down and then put it up on the mantelpiece. The little stable is handmade by Walter and my mother. Last Christmas you made that.
What do you think is the purpose of having a creche? That's something that I never had when we were growing up. I think my parents sort of eschewed that sort of thing because it was traditional with a certain church that they didn't have a whole lot of sympathy with. Mm-hmm. And I feel that we lost something by not having a creche, and that's why I wanted to give one to the grandchildren. Mm-hmm. What purpose do you think it would serve?
Just, I think, in helping the children to see that Jesus had such humble beginnings, and that even the oxen and the donkey and the sheep were around the crib or around the creche and the manger, mm-hmm. and that the simple shepherds And of course, we joke about our name being the shepherds. We're the ones that had special place in having the announcement brought to us first. And just letting the children see the actual scene, I think, is very important, especially since we want to concentrate on Jesus' birth rather than on gifts.
Children do love a baby, don't they? Even
yes.
if they don't admit it too much. And in some families, I don't remember whether you do this or not, Val, to keep the baby Jesus, don't put the baby Jesus in the manger until Christmas Eve. Some families put up the creche for several weeks in advance, but the baby isn't there mm-hmm. until Christmas Eve when the baby's born. Then the baby gets to be put in the creche. It's not exactly historically accurate mm-hmm. because obviously the shepherds wouldn't be standing around waiting for the baby to be born.
Right.
But
uh-huh.
it adds a certain anticipation and suspense to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all the suspense and anticipation that you can put into your Christmas traditions help the child to understand the meaning of Advent, mm-hmm. this tremendous fact that God became flesh, that the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And here's this little creche in your living room, which is a symbol of the fact that Jesus Christ came to live in our house.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliott. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network. Mm-hmm.